The views and opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of WEFT-FM, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the Weft Associates. And now here is this week's edition of IMC Radio News.
Why do we produce the IMC Radio News?
Because the chasm isn't left to right. It's top to bottom.
To give voice to people who aren't heard.
To bust up the myth of objective journalism.
Bill O'Reilly does not have a monopoly on the truth.
To build our community and re-educate the public.
To revive the voice of organized labor.
To bring forth debate so as to animate democracy.
Because I want to agitate for revolution.
Listen to the voices of your community on IMC Radio News.
This week on IMC Radio News, presidential hopeful Dennis Kucinich talks about his candidacy and the increasing allegations against the Bush administration, followed by the shortwave report with news from around the world. But first, these headlines.
The Sydney, Australia IMC reports that on June 26, 2003, the Australian Federal Parliament passed the controversial Australian Security Intelligence Organization legislation. The powers given to ASIO and the Australian Federal Police are the most serious threat to civil liberties in our lifetime and without precedent in peacetime. They make Australian security laws the most repressive in the Western world. By contrast, at the U.S. prison camp on Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, where detainees can be held without trial and without access to family or lawyers, the laws apply only to non-U.S. citizens, as bad as that is. The new ASIO laws, however, apply for the indefinite detention without trial of foreigners and Australian citizens alike. The ASIO Legislation Amendment Terrorism Bill 2002 was introduced into Parliament last December, but faced opposition. Following negotiations between the major parties, the bill was reintroduced into the House of Representatives on May 20th, passed on May 27th, was reintroduced into the Senate on May 13th, and passed on June 25th. It passed through the lower house again on June 26th. Several parts of the new law make it unlike normal criminal law. Under general law, if a person is suspected of being involved in a bombing or organizing an assassination, they can be arrested by the police, questioned, charged, and if guilty, be convicted. Under the new laws, people can be detained who are not suspected of being involved in any crime. The suggestion that they have passively acquired information will be enough. This would cover journalists working on a story, doctors listening to their patients, teachers in the course of their work, priests in the confessional, people surfing the internet, and of course, political activists.
IndyMedia.org reports that riot police evicted hundreds of participants at Montreal, Canada's Tent City inside Parc Lafontaine shortly after 12:30 a.m. the morning of July 6th. At least 40 riot police were already placed inside the large park, and using floodlights in the dark, they proceeded to push back Tent City participants with shields and batons. Many people scrambled to gather their belongings, including their tents and tarps, while others maintained a line in front of the riot police, chanting defiant slogans in defense of the Tent City. At least four people were arrested inside the park. The Tent City is in response to Montreal's housing crisis, increasing gentrification of formerly low-cost working-class areas, and increasing homelessness. The Tent City activists have three demands: decent housing for all, the end of the criminalization of poverty and homelessness, and the repossession of empty buildings for community use. They are stressing the anti-capitalist nature of their action, critiquing the root causes of the housing crisis in Montreal.
The following story was taken from the Urbana-Champaign IMC website. 31 corporate criminals gave more than $9 million to the Democratic and Republican parties during the 2002 election cycle, according to a report released today by Corporate Crime Reporter. Corporate criminals gave $7.2 million to Republicans and $2.1 million to Democrats, the report found. The report: corporate criminal donations to the two major parties was released at a press conference in Washington, D.C. The top five corporate criminal donors, ranked by total amount of contributions to the major political parties in the 2002 election cycle, are Archer Daniels Midland, Pfizer, Chevron, Northrop Grumman, and American Airlines. The report checked the political contributions of more than 100 major companies convicted of crimes from 1990 to this year. "The Republicans and Democrats are awash in dirty money," said Russell Mokhiber, the editor of the Corporate Crime Reporter. "They took in more than $9 million from convicted criminals."
The following item was taken from Matt Bivens' Daily Outrage column in The Nation magazine. Time magazine has a fascinating account of our president's May trip to the Middle East, in which he meets in Qatar with his top men from the Iraq front and immediately demands to know, where are the weapons of mass destruction? As Time tells it, turning to his Baghdad proconsul, Paul Bremer, Bush asked, are you in charge of finding weapons of mass destruction? Bremer said no, he was not. Bush then put the same question to his military commander, General Tommy Franks. But Franks said it wasn't his job either. A little exasperated, Bush asked, so who is in charge of finding weapons of mass destruction? After aides conferred for a moment, someone volunteered the name of Stephen Cambone, a little-known deputy to Donald Rumsfeld back in Washington. Pause. Who? Bush asked. That wraps up headlines this week. Thanks to Beth Rockenbach for reading them here at WEFT and to Kevin Heidrich for coordinating them. Between the lines, Scott Harris spoke Friday with Ohio Congressman Dennis Kucinich about the state of his candidacy and about the allegations that the Bush administration manipulated intelligence data to build public support for the recent invasion of Iraq. Here is a section of that interview, courtesy of the Between the Lines website, www.btlonline.org.
Of the 9 announced Democratic presidential candidates, Ohio Congressman Dennis Kucinich has emerged as a passionate activist on a number of issues important to progressives inside and outside the party. As chairman of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, Kucinich led the fight in the House of Representatives last fall against legislation authorizing President Bush to use force in Iraq. Though he and his allies lost that vote, the tally was closer than many had predicted. The congressman has for several years advocated the creation of a cabinet-level Department of Peace. Dennis Kucinich became known nationally in 1977 when he was elected mayor of Cleveland at the age of 31, the youngest person ever to lead a major American city. But when Kucinich resisted the demand of powerful banks to privatize the city's publicly owned electrical utility, the banks declared Cleveland in default, causing him to lose his reelection bid in 1979. Since entering Congress in 1996, Dennis Kucinich has been a tireless campaigner for labor rights, universal health care, fair trade, sustainable development, and protection of the environment. Although dismissed by the corporate media as a long shot, the Kucinich campaign received a boost recently when the candidate captured second place after former Vermont Governor Howard Dean in an online poll conducted by MoveOn.org, an internet-based activist group. Between the Lines, Scott Harris spoke with Dennis Kucinich about his candidacy and allegations now being leveled at the Bush administration that they had exaggerated or misrepresented intelligence they used to justify the war against Iraq.
The campaign keeps picking up. We're gathering momentum. We're getting endorsements. Second place finish in the MoveOn.org gave us a chance to demonstrate the real ability to attract support from around the country. So the campaign's going just great, and as more and more people go to our website at Kucinich.us, the involvement just keeps spreading. I'm excited.
What's the significance of your second place showing in the MoveOn.org poll? Is that something that people should stand up and take note of?
Well, I got 76,000 votes. I mean, you don't get 76,000 votes in that kind of a process unless you have substantial support. And I think the reason why I finished second out of 9 candidates is because my campaign has struck a responsive chord among people all over the country, because I've been the only one to stand up to this bloated Pentagon budget, to this cause of war of this administration, to the shift of priorities that they've created by invoking fear in this country. And as I continue to do that, I'm confident that more and more people will see that it's my candidacy which will bring about the kind of fundamental change which Americans really aspire to. Americans want a country which is fearless. They want a country which has jobs for all, health care for all, and education for all. And I make the connection. My candidacy makes the connection between the aspirations of people and challenging this administration's march to war on fraudulent premises and their insistence on keeping this country in a condition of fear.
Representative Kucinich, you were one of the leaders in Congress against the march to war that the Bush administration led this nation on. Now that the war, at least the first phase of the war, is over and there is continuing conflict there, what is the role of Congress now in doing the oversight about the allegations that the rationales offered by and justifications offered by the Bush administration were not wholly honest with the American people? And then, of course, we've got mounting casualties on the field there daily from Iraq.
Well, the war is not over. And Congress has a fundamental responsibility to ensure the administration is accountable accountable with respect to the statements that were made about Iraq representing an imminent threat, accountable for the climate that was created that caused Americans to believe that Iraq had something to do with 9/11, with the anthrax attack on this country, or with Al-Qaeda's role in 9/11. This administration has a lot of explaining to do to the American people. Where are those weapons of mass destruction that constituted an imminent threat to this nation? And so Congress and Congress alone has a constitutional responsibility as a co-equal branch of government in a system that depends on checks and balances for Congress to be the check on the aggressive assertions of this administration, for Congress to balance the energies of our nation away from the war path and towards the path to peace, which is the only way that we can rescue America's role in the world and America's capacity to meet the needs of people here at home.
With the Republicans leading both the House and Senate, is there any chance the Bush administration will be scrutinized to the point where we really will know the truth about what happened with the rationales with the war?
Well, we already know the answer to that. The International Relations Committee, under the leadership of the House Republicans, declined a resolution of inquiry which sought information from the administration on their basis for going to war against Iraq, sought the information with respect to the nature of the threat, sought the information with respect to the details as to why the administration had to launch a military attack when it did. Furthermore, the House Republicans recently frustrated an amendment that would have caused Vice President Cheney and the CIA to have to offer the information about the nature of the Vice President's frequent visits to CIA analysts, who then came up with, some said, were reports that essentially cook the books over intelligence. The Republicans apparently are more intent on holding power than they are on getting to the truth of our involvement in Iraq. And I think they're doing it at peril. Because as the American people come to understand that we've been led into a war based on false premises, and they understand that a political party is blocking access to the truth, there may even be a lot of good office holders, people who have been good public servants, who could find themselves caught up in the backlash that's sure to be generated when the American people learn that there's an attempt to stonewall the search for the truth and an attempt to cover up on behalf of an administration that led this nation into a war without any justification whatsoever. We need to work with the world community so that the United States can begin to slowly and deliberately extract ourselves from this major presence that we have in Iraq. The United States cannot let the cause of war in Iraq be the cause of war profiteering for the Bechtels and the Halliburtons. We have to regain our moral authority, and the only way we do that is work with the world community.
That was Ohio Congressman and Democratic presidential candidate Dennis Kucinich. Contact his campaign office at area code 866-413-3664 or visit his website at www.kucinich.us.
The Shortwave Report, a collection of news stories gathered from international sources via shortwave radio in Northern California, brings us the following news segments from Radio Netherlands. In this report, the Italian Prime Minister spewed embarrassing remarks before the EU Parliament as Italy began a six-month presidency of the EU. Honduras is planning to outlaw youth gangs, alarming human rights groups. The Colombian government is going to take a tough line with all rebel groups and drug traffickers. The U.S. has stopped military aid to 35 countries who refuse to protect U.S. citizens from the International Criminal Court. Colombia, which is the third largest recipient of U.S. military aid, is one of the countries now having funds cut. The Indonesian military now claims control of the Aceh province after a war the media has not been allowed to witness, and the Indonesian military says it can do to its own country what the U.S. has done to Iraq. Here is the shortwave radio report with Radio Netherlands.
The Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi's speech to mark the beginning of his country's six-month presidency of the European Union has caused a diplomatic furore. Germany and Italy have summoned each other's ambassadors to their respective foreign ministries. Speaking to the European Parliament, Mr. Berlusconi said German MEP Martin Schulz would be perfect for the role of the guard in a film about concentration camps. The German government has called the outburst unacceptable. However, Italy maintains that Mr. Schulz began the row by making offensive comments about Mr. Berlusconi. The German MEP had said that Mr. Berlusconi was exporting his conflicts of interest in Italy to the rest of the EU. The Italian opposition is calling for Mr. Berlusconi to resign in the light of the incident. Some members of his own coalition believe the Prime Minister went too far and should apologize. The Honduran government is preparing a controversial law which will outlaw youth gangs. Tens of thousands of young Hondurans belong to gangs which have been blamed for gang warfare and violent crime. President Ricardo Maduro says the gangs are a threat to law and order, and tough measures are called for. Human rights organizations are critical of the plans, which they claim will criminalize young people. They also fear that police officers who shoot gang members will go unpunished. Aid organizations say hundreds of young Hondurans have been murdered in the last few years, some of them by members of the police. However, the Honduran police say it's mainly the gang feuds which claim young people's lives. The Colombian government has put forward a plan to end the country's civil war. A tough line will be taken with left-wing guerrillas and right-wing paramilitaries. Drugs traffickers and kidnap gangs, seen as an important source of finance for the rebels, are also to be dealt with. Colombian Defense Minister Marta Lucia Ramirez expects the rebel groups to be so weakened within 6 months, they'll have no choice but to negotiate. Central to the plan is the Colombian government's ability to regain control over about 40% of the country, which is presently in rebel hands. Police units are to be stationed all over Colombia, also in areas where they were previously driven out by the rebels. Colombia is trying to reverse a U.S. decision to suspend military aid to those countries which refuse to give U.S. citizens immunity from the International Criminal Court. Washington has already suspended $5 million worth of aid to the country. Colombia is the most remarkable case of the 35 countries suffering from the new U.S. sanctions. It's Washington's closest ally in the region, closely collaborating in the war on drugs, and is the third on the list of countries that receive U.S. military aid, after Israel and Egypt. Colombia's Vice President, Francisco Santos, believes the situation can be resolved soon, as he told our correspondent, Edwin Copen, in Bogotá.
We're negotiating with the United States about Article 98. Colombia has a treaty with the United States, a 1962 treaty that gives that type of protection, very similar. And we're discussing to them how we adapt that treaty and under that treaty umbrella so that the U.S. Feels comfortable with that and the good relationship, the good alliance that we have with the Americans continues. We don't think that alliance and that good understanding that we have with the Americans will suffer because of this, but so far we're discussing, we're negotiating with them in that sense.
Why does Colombia not firm this bilateral agreement with the United States?
Well, because we have a protection treaty from 1962 that works in the same direction.
What will Colombia do if the U.S. really keeps on threatening not confirming next year's aid to Colombia?
No, we don't think that will happen. We think that Colombia is a very strategic ally of the United States. We're involved together in this war against terrorism. Terrorism that in Colombia has killed Americans, has killed Europeans, and kills many Colombians. And in that sense, we think that the negotiations, which have been going well, but obviously their negotiating positions will end up not affecting the relationship between the U.S. and Colombia.
But as Colombia attempts to negotiate with the U.S., some organizations have condemned Washington's actions.
What he'd liked is from Human Rights Watch and believes the U.S. is simply behaving like a bully.
The tactics used and what the U.S. is trying to achieve is not really primarily in order to protect U.S. citizens from potential prosecutions by the International Criminal Court. It is part of an overall effort to undermine the court altogether.
And although your organization has demanded that these sort of tactics by the United States stop, do you think that the pressure will tell on countries like Colombia who need this military aid?
We hope that Colombia will stay strong on this, and we hope that other parties like the European Union will now, once again, we know that the Europeans have been very active in demarching, will once again express their support and their solidarity with Colombia, because it's about far more than military assistance. It's really about fundamental questions about where we want to be 10 years from now. Do we want to be in a world where one superpower has, through bullying and threatening tactics, undermined international treaty law step by step in various ways? Or do we want to be in a world where international treaty law still matters and still will be a significant component in regulating rights and wrongs?
Is there a real purpose in still pursuing an international criminal court when you don't have the support of somebody still important like the United States? Very important.
The United States is very important, but it's not Alpha Omega to have the United States on board vis-a-vis the International Criminal Court. And we would have wished for the U.S. to, just like other countries, have decided for the time being to stay outside the court. But the United States, as you said, has declared war against this court and has gone out of its way to undermine the court altogether. That I do not think it will achieve. And I think that is actually why it's engaging now in such aggressive tactics as we are seeing.
Lottie Light of Human Rights Watch. The Indonesian military is claiming it now has control over the entire Aceh province, 6 weeks after the battle started to crush the rebels. But Jakarta insists the war on the Gam separatists will continue. And with many of the rebels now hiding in the hills, many more civilians are getting caught up in the violence. Our correspondent, Steph Varson, was allowed an 8-day visit to Aceh. We asked her what she witnessed there.
What is really striking is the fear at the moment in Aceh. It's very difficult to interview people, people on camera. It's nearly impossible. People are so afraid because in the eyes of the Indonesian military, everyone is a suspect. They also told me that. They said everyone in this area basically belongs to GAM. So in their eyes, they can shoot anyone in that area.
So what you're saying is that Achenese who do not belong to GAM are getting caught up on a daily basis in this conflict?
Especially those people who are not involved in GAM, because GAM is flat into the hills. There's no one of GAM really left behind. Only a few are still in the cities. And most of the people who are closer by and living in the villages, they are the victims at the moment, because the military goes into the villages. They ask the people, where are the rebels? And then the people have no real answer because they don't really know. And then they got shot or they've been tortured or been beaten to death. And most of the victims are civilians.
The Jakarta government did promise to show restraint in Aceh. Was there ever any evidence that they were doing so with the military there?
They were trying in the beginning. They were trying to have a professional war. And that was very clear. And they actually took the example of the Americans in Iraq. They're always talking about that. They are saying the Americans did that in Iraq and we can do exactly the same in Aceh. It's beside its own country. And they started a very professional public relation campaign, but they haven't really improved their own behavior. So what's happening is that the outside, it looks very professional, but what's happening on the field is exactly the same as what happened in East Timor. It happened in Ambon. It happened in very many places before. The soldiers are not professional at all.
You say you were speaking to a lot of Achenese while you were there. Are they trying to escape the military? Are they trying to leave their villages, leave their towns and get out?
Thousands of people at the moment have fled to the hills together with the rebels because they have no choice, basically. They say we are caught up in the middle. It's either the rebels who kill us if we don't listen to them, or it's the army. So you see the population is actually cut in half. Half of it is brought to the refugee camps by the military and half of it fled into the mountains and have no food or whatever up there. There's nothing.
President Megawati has said that she wants a quick solution to this conflict. She wants it over quickly. But if civilians are being caught up in the trouble, how will she be able to judge that the military has crushed the rebels?
For her, it's absolutely very important to have a quick solution because it's about re-election next year. So that's also the whole reason why the war started at the first place at this moment. But the military has no objective at all to have a quick solution because for them, it means they are important again. They are in charge in Aceh, and that means also that they are in charge in Jakarta. And they have a lot of economic benefits from the war. They get a lot of money out of it because they run the whole show, transport, security, everything. So I don't think there's a quick solution at all.
Our correspondent, Step Larson.
That wraps up IMC Radio News for this week. The coordination of the UCIMC Radio News is funded by the Funding Exchange's Paul Robeson Fund for Independent Media. You may have noticed that there was not a lot of local content in this show, and that's your fault. If you'd like to get involved with the show, I can help you get your voice and your views onto the radio, but you've got to contact me. Drop me a line at radio@ucimc.org or call 344-8820 extension 1. No experience is necessary. Please give me a call. Archives of this program are available at the IMC website, www.ucimc.org. Financial contributions are also welcome. You can send those checks to the UCIMC at 218 West Main Street, Urbana, Illinois, 61801. Take care and see you next week.